Good evening. This is Mae Brussel at KAZU-FM Pacific Grove, California. It's broadcast number 579, January the 10th, 1983. We're having a crisis. It's a crisis for a radio station. The KAZU tower went down in the rainstorm 2 weeks ago, and a part of it was broken. They ordered a part. It hasn't come yet. It was supposed to be put up by January the 3rd. We continue the broadcast anyway because they go to other stations and out by subscription, so the local people will have to obtain or have obtained the past broadcast to keep up with this information. There's so much that we can't stop. We have to keep rolling every week to keep up with just the bare minimum. Now, I usually begin the broadcast by discussing what took place 1 year ago tonight, just to update some of the stories because the year goes so quickly. And the subjects that I talk about on the air are continuous subjects. They are stories that had a beginning a long time ago. They surface currently, and the news will keep reappearing for years to come on the topics that I share with you because they're not subjects that are just one-time issues that close. And those of you that listen regularly, and this is the 12th year of the broadcast, are familiar with that pattern of how news keeps reappearing. And that's what makes this project so interesting. I forgot last week to update what happened a year ago. That was January the 3rd, so I'm just going to take a moment and do this now. Broadcast number 526, if you don't have the tape or if you want it, January the 3rd, 1982, had to do with the American Federation of Labor, the AFL, George Meany, the CIA, how the AFL-CIO became the arm of the CIA and its links to organized crime syndicate and to breaking up legitimate work. And the reason for doing it that time a year ago was the solidarity, the trouble in the Poland, the instigation of altercations with the Soviet Union, hoping to get a response for them to bring in the troops and possibly set the stage soon for World War III. The history of the AFL-CIO goes back to George Cabot Lodge, the multimillionaire in Boston, who helped the United States Corporation set up what they considered the arm of the trade unions to keep the actual labor movement down and keep it in the control of a specific group of people. And I went into the Eugene Rostow connections and Thomas Kahn and their work for the LID, that was an organization, LID, League for Industrial Democracy, that became the branch of the CIA, putting down the legitimate workers' problems. This all came about starting in 1937 because the Soviet Union had, you know what the Soviet Union did in ways of taking over the government and the laborers having control of a lot of the production and doing away with the multinational corporations, per se. The response to behavior in the Soviet Union started, obviously, in the most obvious date where they got instigated was 1937, where Brown, and Mr. Irving Brown, allied himself with J. Lovestone, and they ousted militant leadership of the Auto Workers Union, United Auto Workers Union. Well, Henry Ford and General Motors were large supporters of Adolf Hitler and fascism and started rearming Germany after World War I to oppose the Soviet system. And Irving Brown and Mr. Lovestone became partners in this international interference with labor. And then during the war, they worked with the OSS. And then when the war was over, still the OSS was our branch of intelligence before the CIA was formed. They worked with the underworld, with the Corsican chief. His name is Pierre Ferri, F-E-R-R-I dash Pisani, P-I-S-S-A-N-I, Pisani. And then that was the beginning of the marriage of the labor unions with the Italian Corsican mafia group in order to keep labor down. And this is where Lucky Luciano was released from the prison. He was head of Murder Incorporated in New York City. Tom Dewey had prosecuted him. Tom Dewey released him to go to Italy. Mussolini had kept the mafia out while he was a dictator there. So as soon as Mussolini was out, the government, the United States government, sent Lucky Luciano to set up organizations to break labor unions all over the world. And in exchange, they would allow them to deal with heroin and cocaine. And that is the origin of the massive importation of narcotics into this country from all over the world, and the union of the mafia drug dealers with the labor OSS CIA, became CIA in 1945, 1947, officially, and the American government from then on had a policy of working together, of breaking the laborers and having them in the control of the federal United States federal government. Now, 1 year after, 1 year ago, rather, I was talking about solidarity, and right now, in 1983, the Solidarity Union was over. It's through. There are labor unions, but the Soviet government has accused in this past year, in the past few months, of the Solidarity being nothing but a CIA front with interference in their government. They brought in Lech Walesa for 1 year. They wiretapped him talking against the Pope and his benefactors. They photographed him in compromising positions with women. He fell for the bait, or maybe he was drugged to do it. I don't know, but Lech Walesa is through. He never was a leader. He was never the con like Gandhi or Martin Luther King. He was a man put in by the intelligence system with not too much intelligence himself, and the charisma was built up through the major propaganda media. Walter Rostow, who was the advisor to Lyndon Johnson during the Vietnam War, began breaking up the Fur Workers Union in Massachusetts for the AFL-CIO a long time ago. Well, solidarity is out. The Pope was accused in the last 2 weeks by the Soviet Union as instigating propaganda in the all the countries behind the Iron Curtain, that he's a propagandist that works for the CIA in the United States. They have openly accused him of this. The Pope was refused a visit to Poland this last year, so there have been changes in what is going on in Poland, and the countries, multiple, behind the Iron Curtain have all of this history, and they have crushed the Solidarity because it was nothing but a Central Intelligence Agency operation. Incidentally, the key man for the CIA, for linking Irving Brown to the CIA's International Organization Division, was Tom Braden. Pardon me, Tom Braden, B-R-A-D-E-N. He's now one of the top newsmen for Mr. Turner's CNN cable broadcasting. And Mr. Braden has a program where he interviews people, and he's called the man from the left. And Mr. Buchanan, who was a speechwriter for Richard Nixon, represents the right. So they try to say they have a balanced left-right discussion with public people in the middle. But Tom Braden was the head of the CIA. He was identified in the Saturday Evening Post. He boasted in 1967 of his International Organization Division, and he helped destabilize Chile for the Allende murder. The AFL-CIO was big there. Tom Braden works for CNN, the propaganda station, and portrays him as the left. It's also interesting that in the story of the Bulgarian connections and the KGB connections to shooting the Pope, which we're going to discuss at great length. I'm going to today, or if not next week, with you on that subject. CNN is the cable broadcasting system, again, that broke the story that was absolutely denied by Secretary of State George Shultz and by the Pope from the Vatican of their discussion of the Bulgarian connections to the assassination attempt of the Pope. All of this is a big propaganda lie, just as was Solidarity, and we'll go into it point by point. But CNN, that covers Tom Braden on a daily salary, is also identified as the station who is playing up the propaganda of the Bulgarian connections. Now, that was a year ago last week. Just quickly, a year ago, this week, January the 10th, that was broadcast number 527, I was talking about the struggles in the White House of the upper echelon, and I began that in March, the night before Ronald Reagan was shot, when CIA Director Bush would have become President of the United States. One night before the shooting, I was talking about the battle of the White House warmongers, and then I updated a year ago tonight. And in that 1 year since we discussed it, Alexander Haig is out of the White House of the State Department. He's on the board of MGM and the think tanks in Washington and all the Heritage Foundation and also in Princeton, but he's out of the position of Secretary of State. Walter Stessel is out as Deputy Director of the State Department under Alexander Haig. Mr. Richard Pipes is out as of this week. Another major propagandist that I'll go into with regard to the Bulgarian story, a warmonger against the Soviet Union. He's going on to Harvard considered one of our better educational institutions, to become head of the history department. I wonder, when people spend that much money going to Harvard University and sending their children, if they really know the propagandists and the liars and the intelligence people that run the faculty, such as Henry Kissinger, who was a professor at Harvard for a long time, who was working with the Defense Department, the CIA simultaneously. Well, Richard Pipes is going back to Harvard. Richard Allen is out. He's going to be the ambassador to Bonn, but he's not head of the National Security Council. So Haig, Stessel, Pipe, and Allen, four of the five that I identified a year ago, are out. The one survivor is William Casey, and it's hard to get him out. Remember, he's linked to Robert Vesco and the security exchange at the time of the Watergate. Casey is locked in there for one particular reason. He is the epitome of the triangle of power: the Vatican, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, the organized crime mafia connections with his Lucky Luciano, Tom Dewey, the World Syndicate and narcotics dealers. And he's the Vatican, the Syndicate, and the intelligence community, because he, again, was one of these so-called freedom fighters that went in parachute down into the Battle of the Bulge, the Arnhem area, where General Patton and our friend Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger and Prince Bernhard, the world leaders, were all in that little geographical enclave that I keep talking about in that Battle of the Bulge area, that I think is the most important geographical area and time slot to affect our history for the future and what has happened to this country in the last 40 years. Casey was there with those people, as well as down in the Corsican area, bringing in the mafia when Mussolini was out, making the world safe, not for Mussolini, but for organized crime syndicates all over the world. So much for that. That was a year ago this week and a year ago last week. And also, to update it, there was a meeting. Irving Brown of the AFL-CIO was in San Francisco December the 2nd. To have a meeting, and he now has been identified, along with Lane Kirkland, as being a source of problem repression, having organizations in South Africa, El Salvador, Honduras. The hold of the AFL-CIO with people organized way, way back to keep control of the labor union in the hands of a group funded not only by Nazi Germany, but fascists in this country. They are more visible and more people are aware of them, and certain people were demonstrating at Irving Brown speaking in San Francisco, and there was a little more in the news this year than there was years before on the awareness of what these people are doing around the world. Now, last week I was updating the news of the year, some important stories, important things I learned during the year, and I was running down some significant deaths that I was able to cover on the program. This isn't all the important deaths of witnesses, but I left off with August of 82, and I'm just going to run down the names of these people, because I'm going to go back with details of the cases now. Even though we discussed them last year, they're still wide open. One was the murder of Calvin Simmons, the black musical conductor, in August of 82 up at Lake Placid. The murder of Gotsbadeh, the CIA agent in Iran. The arrangement of Khomeini with Hamilton Jordan to give the Shah an injection in Panama that would look like natural death, because remember, the Shah did die in Egypt a few months later. If he actually had that cancer at the time, why would they have to be making other arrangements? And the Grace Kelly story is still wide open, the shenanigans going on in Monaco with the mob, the Vatican, and I'll get back to that later. We also have to do more on Grace and 20th Century Fox. I have a story 2 months overdue for the National Examiner on 12 deaths associated with 20th Century Fox. I haven't had time to even catch up on those, but we'll do those soon. The Tylenol story is sitting very quietly. It's very significant. The G. Gordon Liddy explanation, long before it happened, how the CIA had aspirin for aspirin roulette. Mr. Lewis has been arrested. Total silence in Chicago. Leanne Lewis is in Kansas, I guess, clinging up their import-export connections to India and other countries. The Tylenol story continues in another form up here in San Jose. A woman took Anacin. The important thing is that she was taken to the hospital and it was diagnosed as a stroke. She still can't talk or be very verbal on the case, and the doctors gave it a stroke story, that she had a stroke. Then her husband began to sue Anacin for $1 million, and then the motive came in, because he'd already divorced his wife once, remarried her, beat her. He was wanted on other charges of trying to run down members of the family in a car. The charges had been dropped. Who comes into the case but Melvin Belli? And he's the attorney for Jack Ruby. He was the attorney for Errol Flynn, for Mrs. Hermann Göring, the Nazi Hermann Göring. Melvin Belli works with the CIA. He jumped right into the Anderson case quickly. When Mr. Ball came in on the DeLorean case, I said, okay, that's a big case when you get Joseph Ball. When you get Melvin Belli in these cases, you have a big story with international and national connections. And when he gets into the Anderson story, we have to get into more of that. But the whole Tylenol thing is just sitting like a turd. And as I say, we'll get back to the 20th Century Fox. The Nazi Party in Oroville, with the connections to German Nazi Party and worldwide Nazi money, is more important than killing just Joe Hoover, and the plans to free Charles Manson that were intended were stopped when Hoover went to the police. I wrote an account of that in the National Examiner, a small part of that, but there's been more information on the Manson Oroville connections. I discussed William French Smith's Operation TikTok, the war on drugs, and how he blew, we did a program, part of the program, on how he blew five major drug investigations the same week that he said he was going to have this great war on drugs, and how William French Smith and Ronald Reagan and the entire White House clique are so involved in the drug syndicate in every single way that his announcing his war on drugs was a farce. And one of the items I mentioned October 29th was Operation Tic-Tac, how the judge wouldn't allow 1,000 hours of tapes. Why not? Because it involved the CIA, the anti-Castro Cubans, the assassination teams we've been talking about on the air for quite a few years, and the same people involved, if you followed it chronologically, into the murder of John Kennedy in Dallas. Well, since that program that I did on William French Smith, Ricardo Monkey Morales was murdered. He was the primary witness for Operation TikTok. He was killed December 1982. One of the head anti-Castro Cuban assassins, worked for the CIA, blew up that airplane, the Cuban airline that he bragged about, where 76 were murdered. Since I accused William French Smith of covering up the drug assassination teams, their primary witness was shot in the head in Florida. When Kevin McCullough of the CIA was killed just before he was to testify against Edwin Wilson, immediately the intelligence community and the mass media said it was suicide, natural causes or suicide. But how many primary witnesses have to be offed? And I just mention these because they keep going. And in December of 82, just the end of this year, Ricardo Monkey Morales shot in the head. I will update many of these murders again that I did have on the air. And again, I'm going into at great length, I hope very soon, the death of Leon Jaworski. And continuing in the news all the time are the Nugent-Hand violences that I began putting on the air in 1980, October 80, with the first story, the London Times, 14 deaths linked to Nugent-Hand. Well, if there were 14 then, there must be 400 now, but we wouldn't know who they were. They'll look like car accidents and drownings and falling off cliffs and suicides and dying in a forest from exposure. But the story broke with 14 deaths, and we'll keep those up. And also, at the end of the year, Colin Chapman died, the designer of racing cars, a well-known designer who was about to testify about the Swiss bank accounts of John DeLorean, the Lotus company that Chapman heads, and the secret Panamanian accounts that just before he died, he said he didn't have anything to do with. I guess you get the point. In doing a resume of a few of the deaths that I covered in 1982, they were primary witnesses to cases that should be investigated, that will be ongoing cases that don't die, and we have to keep using these names over and over until you become aware of the pattern that is taking place of when they're off, at the time they're off, when the investigations are about to appear, such as attorney Norman Gary at 20th Century Fox, when Marvin Davis is being investigated and his partner, Mr. Rich. There are ways to die. There is Tylenol that appears like a stroke. There are heart attacks that are not heart attacks that are cyanide in medicine. Their wrong diagnosis. There are silent machine guns. The IRA came out just recently in their trial in New York, and I want to do the DeLorean IRA connections also. They sent illegal machine guns over to Ireland, and the IRA said, well, how do they know they work? And they said, we tested them in Central Park. I have articles on joggers that drop dead in parks, or the ambassador, the former ambassador from Belgium and San Francisco found dead in a park. There is poison in food that Frank Turple talked on the air this year about heads falling in soup when they tasted their soup. The rats that eat your stomach while you're alive that Idi Amin used, tested by Mr. Frank Turple. And this last week, his wife was arrested for her work in working with Idi Amin. She's in the CIA also. There's injections in the stories that appear to be natural causes that'll make a person, former head of a government who represented the United States, was put in power by the United States, you inject him to make him look like natural causes. There are experts at plane crashes. Mr. William Morgan Hetrick, the long drug dealer with massive accounts in the Cayman Islands and elsewhere, who worked between Fort Lauderdale and Hollywood and up in California right near the Reagan Ranch. Hetrick, when he was arrested with his narcotic supply for DeLorean to parlay his $20 million into a $60 million operation, he was described as a man who worked with Learjet Company. I have to go more into that story, too, the Learjet for you. Morgan was the expert witness at plane crashes. Now, it would be interesting to get some private investigator to find out what trials he testified at and see if those planes were sabotaged. We talked on the air about the cancer test, giving cancer to people, Harvard doctors and the Rockefeller Institute giving cancer. So even stories of Mr. Sharon, they asked him at the time of the massacre, they had these Palestinians, you know, what should we do with them? And he said, cut off their testicles. I don't know if they die of it, but it certainly isn't very comfortable. That's one of the, you know, operations of Israel. The orders cut off the testicles. Also in the news were stories of poison umbrellas that opened. This was suggested in the case of a person from Bulgaria who was in London, and they acknowledged that fact. When John Kennedy was murdered, there was a man with an umbrella standing on the curb, and when the car passed the corner and just when Kennedy was shot, it was either a signal or there was some weapon possibly in the umbrella that came out. But again, this year, 1982, in December, the umbrella story. Also, poison darts, injections thrown to you through various instruments like the cameras. And then there's the coup de grace, the kind of killing that Ms. Smith did to John Belushi. She just simply said, I gave him the coup de grace. I mixed these two elements, the cocaine and the heroin, and killed him off. She can't be really put in jail for that because her suppliers will link to that large international Hollywood connection that would bring in and develop the major personality people, the people, the persons you see on your TV screens, on your nightly news, in the various magazines, all those so-called beautiful people. So in 1982, in summary, you had the cameras that killed, the fake heart attacks, the fake strokes, the cyanide dished out, the cyanide aspirin, the silencers and machine guns, testing people in parks, dropping dead poison food, rats. I repeat this because these are the methods you read and accept. The news story, so-and-so died, apparent suicide, so-and-so died, apparent heart attack. It isn't that way at all. When you read who they were and what they were doing when they died, you get a total different picture. They were at the height of success. They're about to testify at a trial. They knew somebody that if they testified would affect changes in our society. And then there's the old-fashioned gunning down like Mr. Maselli or Fiorina. The witnesses to the Raymond Donovan case, when he's linked to the Gambinos and the Genoveses, and there's our Secretary of Labor from New Jersey close to Helene Von Damme in the White House. When you don't have time for the subtle poisonings and injections, you just gun them down and put them in trunks and cars. That hasn't run out of style either. But you inject the coup de grace, you mix the drugs, and well-known rock musicians or so forth, you say, well, they had an overdose of drugs, or Mr. Chapin, the rock musician, he died last year. He's just squashed between a truck and his little car on a freeway, just sandwiched in. There are a lot of ways to do it, and the important thing is that the examples that I'm citing here on the air are ones that the intelligence community has testified in their courts or in their grand jury hearings that they did specifically. I have a whole file, maybe 26 inches of a filing cabinet, one entire drawer, of ways to die. And these aren't out of fiction. These aren't things I made up. These are ways that the CIA has said that they perfected before congressional committees. These are ways they testified at trials. These are ways that came up at grand jury hearings, and they're in the major news media. What I simply do is take them, copy them, and put them into one file, whether it's Mr. Turple talking about rats eating stomachs of live people or heads falling in soup, fixing up airplane crashes, etc., etc. So that is 1982 ways to die. Maybe in 1983 they will have perfected some new ones, they admitted. I'm sure they will, but if you get the umbrellas and the darts and the food and the rats and the airplane crashes and the strokes and the medicines and you put it all together and the gunning down and the mixture of drugs and the car crashes and so forth, it's hard to separate who is off. The most important thing I can say as we start 1983, or if you read your history books of the past, is look at the way they died, and today they're saying more appearance, it isn't clear cut, then look at what they were doing. And if what they were doing was interesting or questionable or provocative, if they're 34 years old and were active in the anti-war movement and so forth, Vietnam veterans that came home drugged and so forth, save those articles, just put them in a pile, and at the end of the year, you can develop your own story about what is happening in this country. That concludes our summary, I think, of 1982, although I will be continuing on the air the stories that we've mentioned before as new information comes in about them. Now, just as the news media lies about the way people are killed, the way witnesses are killed, they lie about the economy, and that is treacherous also because it deludes us into a security that we're now learning we don't have. It deludes us into believing that sending a $300 billion debt to South America will be paid back. Even at his press conferences last week, the President of the United States had no solution. He was asked about the $300 billion loan to South America, and his answer was that if there was widespread default, there would be some very severe financial problems. Well, the $300 billion to South America is a fraction. There are debts to Poland, Romania, Europe, Asia, Southeast Asia, South Africa. The fact is that the United States banks have loaned out more money than they have in the banks, and there's no way of getting it back. And this is something you have to deal with and stop believing again in the tooth fairy. Now, two reports came out of Congress which are interesting. One, December 26, just before it was reported, December 26 in the Washington Post, just days before the men left to go home for the holidays and tired from the lobbying on the various bills at the end of Congress. The report was presented by Henry S. Roos of the Joint Economic Committee of Congress. It was a CIA study of the Soviet Union titled "The Soviet Union is Not a Basket Case." That's an interesting title for the Washington Post, considering simultaneously the American economy was a basket case and the men had to stay over that same day to pass some bills so that there would be money to run the federal government simultaneously. Now, this report is a heavy report studied for the past, analyzing the past 30 years. It was given to Congress, and it said the gist of the report was that certainly Russia has major economic problems. They admit that they have economic problems, but they're nothing like what is explained to us by various persons in the administration. And they cited the chief propagandist for the Ronald Reagan administration, Richard Pipes, senior White House advisor on the Soviet Union, who I said is now going back to teach the people at Harvard, heaven help them. He said the Soviet Union is in the midst of an acute crisis of its governing system. He said the Soviet Union is going to collapse, and he told us that the Soviet economy is going to be brought down to its knees. The power of the West will alter the Soviet system to bring it to its knees. And this report says that there is no responsible person who believes this, that this is wrong. The president has a report now, 401-page report called USSR Measures of Economic Growth and Development, and our professor from Harvard is nothing but an outright liar, an absolute liar. And also on the same page of the Washington Post, December 26, in a corner of the story on the lying of the Soviet economy, Turkish ex-diplomat dies in apparent suicide. See, there's one of those apparent suicides. In Santa Monica, California, a retired Turkish diplomat died after flinging himself over a 100-foot cliff. He was 48 years old. He had been thinking of suicide, they said, for 3 months, and he apparently jumped over the Palisades Park and was pronounced dead. His name was Ali Bolukbasi, B-O-L-U-K-B-A-S-I. I better give you his name because probably in the investigation of the Ajan case and the way he killed a publisher, a leftist publisher in Turkey, and was let out of the jail by the right-wing faction. Those right-wing people are now being investigated on the plot to shoot the Pope, not the Bulgarians, but the gray wolves from Frankfurt, Germany, and Bonn that we'll be getting into. This Turkish diplomat probably came to the United States, probably, as a reward for his Ajan Vatican connections. For whatever reason, he's a retired diplomat, only 48 years old, pretty young to retire, living out by the Pacific Palisades. There's a 100-foot cliff, and he's thrown over just at a time of the big propaganda push about the Bulgarians doing the assassination attempt on the Pope while the CIA is being charged with that particular murder try. We'll take a one-minute break now while you turn your tape cassette over on the other side. This is Mae Brussel from KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California.